My guest today holds the record for the most championship bracelets at the World Series of Poker. He's got 14 of them, including the main event in 1989 and the main event of the WSOP Europe in 2012. He also holds the records for the most final tables and the most cashes. Speaking of cash, he's made over $21 million in poker tournaments and even more through cash games and endorsements and personal appearances. He was inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame in 2007. He's now a regular on Poker Night in America. And a few weeks ago, you might have seen him as one of the analysts on ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker main event. And now he's written his autobiography, which is called Poker Brat. Here's Phil Hellmuth. Hi, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. I'm heading to the studio right now as we speak. I'm doing the audio version of Poker Brat. So that's like you read into a microphone for 4 or 5 hours a day for 4 or 5 days. But it has to be done.
Yeah, I got news for you, Phil. I've been doing that for 40 years.
Oh, man, who
gave you the name Poker Brat?
I gave it to myself in 1998. We were trying to think of, it was me and Andy Glazer, an old friend of mine who, we're just kind of sitting around and we're talking about potentially writing my autobiography that far back. And I kind of came up with the name Poker Brat, and we're like, man, that's perfect. It's sad. But it's perfect.
Well, let's stay with that theme for just a moment here, because you have a chapter in this book, chapter 14. The title of it is "Why Do I Act Like a Jerk Sometimes?" And I guess,
man,
this has been one of the things that people have said about you over the course of the last 30 years or so. Why do you act like a jerk sometimes? Have you figured it out?
Well, yeah. The great thing about being a poker player is you're always very introspective, because the one thing that can happen in my profession that can happen to basically no one else is I can lose all of my money on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't matter how much money you have. There's someone that will play with you that high, and then you could lose it all in one day. And so you learn to be very, you have to pay attention. You're always on guard. You're always looking inside. What caused me to play badly today? Why did I go on tilt? Why did I misplay this hand? Did I misplay this hand? And you're always looking inside. Did my wife getting upset at me affect my play at the table? And so you're always, it's very introspective. And so for me, it was easy to isolate back to when I was a kid. So I'm the oldest of five, and I'm a guy, and I didn't have great grades, and I wasn't really great at, any sports. And so, or playing instruments. And so my brothers and sisters were all getting good grades. They were all really good at sports. And so what did I have to live for? What did I have to live for? And so I had to beat them at every game. So when we played Monopoly, when we played checkers, when we played chess, every game we used to play, spoons when you're a kid, I learned how to play those games perfectly, perfect strategy, backgammon. And so, and then if I ever lost at one of those games, I'd just be like, oh, my God, you rolled 2 double 6s. You did this. You did that. So the poker brat was kind of born with me just clinging on to the one thing I was great at versus my brothers and sisters' games.
So it came from your hyper-competitive nature?
Right. What did I have to live for? My parents, they love good grades, just like every parent. They loved kids that were, good at athletics. They loved kids that could play instruments. And so I didn't have any of that, no self-esteem at all, and I'm the oldest, so I had a built-in advantage at the games.
Hey, Phil, when you were playing Monopoly with your brothers and sisters and everything, did you have that look like, I have the get-out-of-jail card, but I'm not letting anybody know that I have it?
Well, I had that look, and I had an intensity in my eyes, I can't lose.
Oh, wow.
Well, I want to go back to this jerk theme for just a second, and this is not the only thing I'm going to talk to you about today, but I want to get this out of the way, because there have been times that very well you verbally abused players at the table when they played badly against you and then got lucky. Don't you want your opponents to play badly, and don't you want to encourage that kind of play rather than discourage it?
Of course. And so within the poker world now, when I'm playing, we just came off 7 weeks of playing at the World Series of Poker.
Yep.
So if I ever lose it like that, all the kids at the table, and all the young guys, they just kind of like, I can see them all laughing. They kind of put their hands to their face. They're like, Phil's losing it again. Phil's losing it again. And then they tweet out, oh, Phil lost it. And then at me and then 20 other people. Well, now you know you've arrived when Phil loses at you. So it's kind of become, you know, it doesn't have the potency that it used to because people expect me to kind of lose it. But yeah, no, it was embarrassing to not be able to control myself. And my wife and I would watch it, and here we're watching on ESPN in primetime, and I'm going on some tirade, and my wife is just like, what in the world are you doing? I have my head in my hands, and the kids are like, wow, you're so embarrassing, Dad. You're so embarrassing. They weren't used to seeing me. You know, you have to understand that it's not 1% of life. I lose it. But, you know, it's definitely a flaw, and I've gotten better over the years at losing it less. But one thing's for sure, when I lose it, there's reporters and the ESPN cameras there to catch it.
Absolutely. I mentioned in the intro that you were doing the analysis again this year for the main event. After you got knocked out, you stuck around, and you and Daniel Negreanu and Antonio Esfandiari were doing different parts of the analysis of this. What did you make of John Hesp, the middle-aged Englishman who just seemed to be having the greatest time of his life?
This guy was a breath of fresh air for poker. He brought fun back to the game. And so, you know, I was thinking, man, I want to meet this guy. And at the end of, I don't know, day whatever, 9, he said, hey, I really want to meet Phil Hellmuth or Daniel Negreanu. So I called the producers. And I said, hey, put me in touch with Hess, because there was a 2-day break between the final table. We used to take a break called the November 9, where we'd actually wait 3 or 4 months before we played it. In this case, it was just a 2-day break. And so I took him out to dinner. Loved the guy's attitude. You know, he's someone that dropped out of school with perfect grades at, like, age 17. And, you know, they're like, what are you doing? You're wasting your life. And he, you know, by the time he was 20, he was offered to run somebody's business. And by the time he was 22, he was the head salesman at kind of, I'd call it an RV thing, RVs. Mm-hmm. I guess they'd call it over there, caravans, they call it.
Right.
So caravans, right. And the next thing you know, he had his own shop by the time he was 35. So he has a lot of money. He's been very successful. And, you know, he had never played in bigger than a $100 buy-in tournament in Las Vegas. He plays once or twice in a 20-pound buy-in. His biggest cash was $1,000. And now he's at the final table of the World Series of Poker with a chip lead, $1 million for ninth and $8 million for first. And he was having a ball.
Yeah.
He felt like he was lucky to be there. And, you know, his energy was awesome for all of us.
He reminded me a lot of my friend Dennis Phillips. I was with Dennis when he was one of the original November Niners back in 2008. I was sitting about 8 feet away from him as he was playing in the final table that year. And like John Hesp, Dennis went there as the chip leader. Again, middle-aged guy, having the time of his life, had never been to the World Series of Poker before, and just had a fantastic time and played really well and ended up finishing third and making millions of dollars. But more than all of that, he inspired other players. And I think a lot of other guys are watch, and hopefully more women, were watching these guys and others like them who get in there, and they're not wearing sunglasses, hoodies, and headphones, and playing Chinese poker on their iPads while they're sitting at the table.
Or staring other players down, like every time you make a bet, you've got some kid staring you down for 20 seconds, and they're robotic, and yeah, it's all that bad stuff you just mentioned. And yeah, Dennis Phillips was a breath of fresh air for us. And made another deep run, as you know.
Yes, the next year.
And then Hesp took it to another level. Like, just the joy he showed, and you know, showing one card, showing two cards, showing no cards, just having a ball.
Yep.
And you know, both of those guys, you know, Dennis Phillips and John Hesper, just great for our game.
And by the way, John ended up finishing fourth and, you know, again, making a lot of money. And considering he only made $1,000 as the biggest cash before that, good for him and hopefully good for the game. I hope it brings more middle-aged guys in there, which brings me to the other problem I see at the main event. I heard Norman Chad say that this year there was exactly one woman under the age of 26 who entered the main event, and she wasn't even an American. She was from somewhere in Europe. That's a problem for the future of the game, isn't it, Phil?
Well, yeah, we have had an issue with We can see the numbers now, not just number of players, but number of viewers, and we're losing some of that crowd which we had, which we owned. We owned the 18 to the 25 year olds, and one reason we owned them was because that was a legitimate way for them to make a living. And so, if you were really good at poker, by the time you're 19, you're sneaking in places playing, you know, and by the time you're 21, you might have $1 million, $2 million. And so it was a legitimate way to make a lot of money. And so, yeah, and so it's kind of unfortunate. We seem to be losing those guys for whatever reason. A lot of them are heading more towards esports. And so we'll see. I mean, I think just yesterday I pitched College Poker Showdown to Poker Central. And I think that's a good show, and probably something we need.
But how specifically do you get more women in there? The main event, 2.5-3% of the field, year in, year out, is women. That's a ridiculously low percentage.
It's true, and there's some great women players out there. Some great, great women players. Some of the best players in the world are women, despite that low percentage. I think it's a matter of I think especially with the way current trend in poker of these kids playing and just staring you down, I think it's intimidating for everybody, but especially for women. You've got some guy just staring you down for 30 seconds every time you make a decision. It's unpleasant for everybody.
Yep.
I think that's part of it. I think, you know, somebody like Hess being there, I mean, I think people want to have fun.
Yeah.
You know? And the World Series of Poker, as the years past the $10,000 buy-in, isn't quite what it used to be. It's still a lot of money. But, you know, heck, we were playing 10K buy-ins at the series in the 70s for the main event.
Yeah, but the social interaction, you know, this is why people go and play $20 poker tournaments in their basements with their friends, so they can sit around and tell stories and drink beer and have fun. And then you go to a poker room, and there's some guy who's waiting 30 seconds to make a decision every time. Dude, you have Jack 4 offsuit. Throw the cards away. Let's go.
Well, that's right. And so it seems like the trend has been away from that. I think a lot of the people that think they're getting like a 0.5% edge from doing that 30-second stuff or 1% edge are shifting away from it. And so it seems to me there's been a trend away from that kind of behavior. Daniel and I shamed one of the slow players 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep.
And even we shamed this guy on social media, the guy from Brazil, for playing a little bit slow. He was taking 30 seconds per decision. And, yeah, someone had raised and someone had re-raised. And it's like you said, he had Jack 4 offsuit, Jack 5 offsuit. What are you doing? You know you're never playing this hand. Why do you have to cost us, as we like to say in poker, I'd like that 20 seconds of my life back.
Now let's get back to the fun side of this. Is there anybody more fun in the celebrity world to have at your table than Brad Garrett?
Brad Garrett is great. I mean, I invited him to play in Poker Night in America, and he came, and he is just a blast. I mean, this is a guy, too, you have to understand, you have to be ready for his humor.
Yep.
So he's as funny as you could ever be with no lines. No lines. So he's going to attack you if you're black, if you're white, if you're Asian, if you're whatever. He's going to attack it and make fun of your, you know. And so some people are offended by that. But I say if there's a guy that attacks everybody equally, then I can put up with it.
Yep.
You know?
Especially if he's donating chips, which Brad tends to do, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, to be fair, the last session, the big televised hand that everybody was talking about on Poker Night in America, he had pocket kings, so it wasn't a bad. It just so happened he was in third place. It was deuce 4-6 flop. I had three sixes, and Matt Glantz had pocket aces. But I wouldn't say he was giving chips away that hand. That's for sure.
No, no,
he was just unlucky.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest mistake most poker players make?
Well, most amateurs don't understand the level of patience it takes to play hold'em. So they just don't understand that sometimes you just have to fold. You know, you've been waiting all day, and sometimes you just have to fold the queen-jack suited. Sometimes you have to fold the king-queen suited. And so in our regular game, I've been teaching, there's an NBA athlete, I can't mention names. A lot of the NBA guys have played in my regular game here in the Bay Area. And one really smart guy playing with us now, and I showed him how I folded king-queen suited, and he's like, what? But he learned.
Yeah.
Smart guy. And then all of a sudden, so yeah, I think if an amateur understands you have to occasionally fold king, queen suited, then that's like a, it seems like a bullet point that just hits hard for them. So yeah, it's about understanding the level of patience. Most amateurs play too many hands.
Yeah, yeah. Just fold more often and hold on to your chips and wait for your right moment.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it's amazing how well that works. People just don't have the right level of patience in life. You know, we're a very fast society now.
Yep.
And if you don't have patience, I would believe that if I were a professional poker player in St. Louis and I just had great patience, then I would make a living. Just with great patience. And there's a lot of places, there's a lot of areas where that can be the case, where you just can make a living just because you have great patience.
Although even the most patient poker player in the world can go through a run bad that lasts for months.
Yes, I would say if you have great patience, you could get unlucky for a month for sure. I wouldn't say months, but it depends on the frequency. I mean, if you're playing only two or three times, if you're playing four times a week, you could get unlucky for 16 sessions. That happens.
Yeah. The book is called Poker Brat. It is Phil Hellmuth's autobiography. There are great stories in here from his times at the World Series of Poker and also about his family, and a really wonderful story about how he wooed his wife, Kathy. And I can't believe how long it took you to finally get to the end of things with her and finally become her husband. But it's a wonderful story, which I don't want to spoil here. I'll just tell people to go out and buy a copy of the book.
You know what I like about the book? I basically was kind of a high school nothing, really. Struggled in high school and then kind of made something of myself. And then there's two chapters I love. The one is that, like, a very inspirational chapter where I discover some, you know, things about being super positive, and I kind of write down my life goals. And then the two other chapters that my wife hates the most is a chapter on how I almost left her in 2015 and how she almost left.
Yeah.
People that read this book, maybe they'll stay together because they read it. And my wife and I have been together 28 years, and we're very happy. But anybody who's been together for a long time knows that there's times you're ready to be apart. And so we fought through that. We looked at our issues, you know, and we were honest with each other.
Yeah, you know? And you're very honest.
You're an egotistical maniac, Phil. Okay, hon, I'll see what I can do about that.
Talk about patience. I'm guessing that is Kathy's number one word when you're married to Phil Hellmuth. You better be patient. Again, the book is called Poker Brat. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Phil. Thanks for your time today.
You guys have a good one.
Thank
you. Bye-bye, St. Louis.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.